Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
mounted as the floating palace neared her European port. Having crossed from New York to Bishop's Rock off the English coast in 3 days, 10 hours, and 40 minutes, the liner United States established a new Atlantic speed record July 6, 1952. Cheering crowds at Southampton hailed the American ship that had clipped 10 hours from the transatlantic mark set by Britain's own Queen Mary. Then westbound, the United States knifing through the Atlantic for her second record crossing. It was noted by the builders of the ship that in the event of necessity for emergency conversion to military service, the United States could transport 14,000 men, or virtually a full division, 10,000 miles without putting into port for food, fresh water, or fuel. But for the crew and officials and passengers aboard the liner, the greatest moment was now at hand. The United States was reaching Ambrose Lightship outside New York with the Blue Riband of the Atlantic, having made the return trip in a record 3 days, 12 hours, 12 minutes. Saluting the ship whose maiden voyage shattered Atlantic speed marks going over and coming back. At the turn of the century and beyond, Great Britain and Germany dominated leadership in fast Atlantic crossings. Now, for the first time in almost 100 years, the speed crown was claimed by the Stars and Stripes. New York, home port for many of the greatest ships on the oceans, really put on a show. A big broom symbolized the sweep of the Blue Ribbon Speed Trophy by the $70 million United States, America's first lady of the high seas.
Good afternoon and welcome to America's Disabled Veterans in Action. I'm Dr. George Anderson and this is ADVIA.media. I want to thank everybody for following us on Facebook and Twitter. And I want to ask everybody, please remember to support the SS United States Conservancy, a ship that we take an interest in because it's symbolic of what we do as veterans and the treatment that we get after our services. This great ship, although being a record winner, is headed to the scrap heap if we don't show our support. That being said, let's get down to the news. And boy, do we have news out of Fayetteville today. We have a caller that's calling to tell us something of what's happening down in North Fayetteville, North Carolina, at the VA. Caller, are you with us?
We are right here.
Okay. Tell us what's happening.
We are an agency, Steps and Stages, Jubilee House, that provides transitional services and spiritual support for women veterans. And we are presently being faced with a hostile takeover by, a lawyer and a few other supporters who have determined that women veterans are not worth having a dedicated sanctuary in a community for their housing and safe haven.
What are they trying to force on you?
Right now, what they're forcing is the actual eviction of the current veterans and other people in transition in the house. We have one house that specifically, that's a Jubilee House for women veterans, and then we also
right.
have an Exodus House for men veterans, and we have a Finnish Strong House for physically challenged veterans. Finnish Strong House, we have a veteran. He's served above the Navy veteran, served on the submarines, and he actually has muscular dystrophy. So,
okay.
This past Saturday, I understand that someone came to the house with a note and then changed the locks while they were inside the house and then left a note saying that they would have to relocate. So that is what we're faced with.
Oh, wow. This is the same Jubilee House that the First Lady came to, correct?
It is the same one. It is the same Jubilee House that Barbara Summey Marshall, used my VA compensation and part of my Social Security to purchase in 2010, August of 2010. Bought it with personal money because I'd had so many women veterans living in my home with my children and needed to have that extra space for, because we were getting so many calls, we needed an extra dedicated house for the veteran. So we bought that house, and, yeah, the rest is history.
I'm sorry, Barbara, what did you say?
I said we bought the house in order to give the veterans a safe place, especially the women veterans, because we were taking in so many women veterans that had children. We wanted to give them a safe place to heal and to recover and also to make plans for a fresh new life.
Exactly. And see, this is a historically underserved market, so this is why we're very interested in what's happening to you, because this, what you did has been really admirable, because most of the time, veterans, it is us that steps up to the plate. Go ahead. Yes, we're listening.
I didn't hear your last statement.
I said we're always willing to help another organization out when we are able to, you know the background and the circumstance that they're facing. Because, I mean, what's motivating this hostile takeover?
I think there are a couple of motivations. The number one motivation is that the house was opened and dedicated specifically for housing women veterans, and that was a new effort for the community. Because women veterans are historically considered as invisible and not seen and not worthy of that kind of a house. So from the very onset, we spent most of our time just to prove value, to prove that the women were worth living in a house, to prove that much of an investment from the ABC Homemaker Show and the community persons as well, that the women were worth it. So that's been kind of the struggle from day one.
Well, ABDIA has been dedicated to the struggle of women veterans because historically they're underserved. We were one of the first organizations to bring out that at 7 out of 10 VA hospitals across the country, women's services aren't even available to female veterans. And that's a disservice.
Correct.
Yeah, this is not something that you're making up. This is something that is epidemic across the country. So, that's why we... Yes, go ahead, Barbara. I'm here.
No, I was just going to say, Dr. Anderson, I just wanted to applaud you for all of your efforts on behalf of women veterans. That's what I wanted to say.
Well, it's because of the fact that we have had men and women who are paying the price. You know, I can't tell you how many women that I have met living in their cars with their children. How many women veterans have lost their children because of serving in the military? You know, these are facts. These aren't something that we're just pulling out of thin air. This happens more than we can count. And the thing about it is, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. You know, so, now with these people that started this lawsuit, what angle are they taking to try to attack you? Because what I'm trying to understand, I'm trying to get the whole nation to understand exactly what's happening, because what's happening to you in North Carolina is not just you. It's happening to all of us that try to establish businesses to help our own community. So tell us what, if you don't mind, Barbara, giving us, lay down the dirty and tell what's happening.
Dr. Anderson, what's happening is the heartbreaking reality that in some communities, veterans are not a priority, Dr. Allen. There's a lot
of talk about how important they are. There's a lot of hoorah and there's a lot of billboards, but when it comes to boots on the ground, reaching out to the veterans and then sticking with those veterans that really require your time and your energy, a lot of communities are not in it for the long haul. And that's what we're encountering there. There is a lot of talk about doing it, but when we opened up the house for homeless women veterans, it was such a new idea. Again, like I said, there was very little support and a lot of misunderstanding because a lot of people didn't think that the women existed. They didn't believe that we had women veterans in the community because the women weren't going as much to the VA for services and support. So we had to, then you had to prove that the women existed. Then you had to recruit the women, encourage them to go to the VA. And then once they went to the VA, then you had to support them and encourage them not to give up just because services might not have been readily available, doctor.
You know, this is something that I'm always talking about and saying, thank you for your service. What does thank you for your service mean if when it's time to put food on the table or pay the rent or pay the bills that one may have? Because we're finding more often than not, people will tell you thank you for your service, but that doesn't mean anything. It's an empty promise. And when we have these empty promises that are coming out to our community, we have an issue that we have to make sure that we have to do what we can in order to, you know, advocate, because these people do not understand that there has to be some value to the sacrifice. You know, we go into the military, and today, if we look at the 2016 rate of pay for an E-1 going in out of high school, it's $2.35 per hour. And even when you get to E-7, E-8, you're still earning at your basic labor wage. I'm just talking about your salary for the work that you do 24/7, 168 hours out of a week. You're just paying $7.35, less than minimum wage in a lot of states. So we have to speak up. This is why we're doing what we're doing, you know, because organizations like yours are doing what they're doing for women veterans, and so we have to make sure that we do our part to keep our focus on our community. And when we keep our focus on our community, like on this show, by talking about your Heritage House, we're helping to bring forward the news and information that affects our community. You know, the very fact
Absolutely.
Of the matter, the very fact of the matter that you're in a district. Now, my question is, have you talked to your representative about what's going on with your organization?
I have not reached out directly to the congressman, but was aware that Congressman Price is my congressman, and I think that it is, yeah, I do need to take that step. That is a part of the strategy.
Yeah, the thing is that in order to hold together, what we have to do is to hold together with the folks that we have. Now, you have Senator Tillis, who I had the opportunity to meet. I have not been too happy with some of his antics in Congress, which because I think that they have jeopardized what we should be focused on in helping our veterans. But that aside, we have to work with him because he is one of the ranking members on the Veterans Committee. So the thing is that we need to get the whole legislative team from North Carolina on board because something's wrong here. We're not getting what we need at all with as far as the support that you need to keep your business stable. You know, if you're
Absolutely.
Going to be withstanding attacks, you're going to be withstanding attacks when you're trying to help the veteran community from a standpoint of your nonprofit, I take it, right?
That is correct, doctor.
As a nonprofit. It's not an easy job. It's not an easy job. And
no, it's not.
This is exactly why we speak up on the issues of what we have to do as a community. You know, because if we don't talk about what we need to do, we're going to find that we're going to be shut out. And so that's why that's one of the reasons why I keep our news media so that we can have this network, ADVIA, because mainstream media is not going to hear what we got to say. And their 15 minutes, their 15 seconds of space that they want to give veterans on Veterans Day, it's not enough to cover all of the needs that we have. So we have to have an outlet that's dedicated to the cause. Just in case any listeners are out there and you have any questions and want to join in this discussion, you can call our Brooklyn Navy Yard number, which is 347-884-8078, 347-884-8078. So, but, you know, when we are dealing with this, it's a very hard walk to do because you're actually living the commitment. And so that
living
we commend
it.
You for, because your vision brought this forward. And
thank
we
you.
we don't have people that are understanding of the fact, except veterans. The veterans are the ones that are bringing about that understanding because we are putting our hand to the till, you know, to
yes.
make sure that we can go ahead and break up the earth, so to speak, to give the veterans a chance to plant new seeds to grow a healthy lifestyle, you know. And
absolutely.
This is not something that everyone is doing. Not everybody gets that. Your program, one of the things that I most admired about your program since I have seen its inception, it saves the veterans the indignity of having to go to a homeless shelter. And we need more programs
yes.
like that. Because our veterans
yes, it does.
Go to their dignity.
Yes, but you know what I like? I think you summarized exactly our vision. Our vision was to have a home for the women veterans that would, yeah, give them the opportunity to still be people of dignity, to come into a transitional house that was specifically designed to meet their needs, and then to encourage them to pursue jobs and permanent housing and stability. That is exactly what
yeah,
we saw.
Even to the point, I'm sure that you have counselors working with you, is that if they couldn't
yeah.
pursue jobs, because sometimes some of us come out and we're so messed up we can't work. Sometimes that happens too, but then if we have the resources, I'm sure if you're in that condition in your home, the thing that we have to look at is that if you're in the condition in that home, we have to look at the fact of the matter, that the resources are there. If you can't necessarily work, you offer them the social services. And this is what I've read of your program since you started. So this is not the first time I've heard of it, as you see. So the thing about it is that, you know, this is why we asked you to come on air. This is why we said, come talk to us. Let us try to give you a platform because you are one of our community. And being one of our community, we must do more by helping one another.
Absolutely, absolutely. And also, Dr. Anderson, I think, too, one of our challenges is that because there aren't any other dedicated homes for women veterans in our community, that a lot of times, yeah, because there aren't any others, that sometimes it's real hard to convince and to keep a home like that open, because a lot of times people don't see the need for it. If it's not there, then it's difficult for people to see the need. But I think, like, to have a show like yours that highlights the needs of men and women veterans especially, I think that helps to keep it in the forefront of the community, because sometimes I think the women feel like they're invisible, Dr. Anderson. A lot of women, they think when they go to the VA, they're not seen, they're not considered as veterans. In fact, some don't even go to the VA because they don't believe that people that care or understand you know, their particular needs. Another reality, too, that we have encountered since the Jubilee House and Steps and Stages has been operating for the past 10 years is that we realize that some women veterans leave the military with challenges that prevent them from being able to enroll at VA right away. So if you get a veteran that has a discharge that is a barrier or has PTSD or military sexual trauma or military sexual assault, sometimes those persons, they just don't feel comfortable going into a male environment. They need a dedicated house like a Jubilee House.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I mean, this is something that touches on another issue. We've been having an issue with the VA of Washington, D.C., in that there is in the PTSD ward for the women, there's the communal bathroom that the women have to share with the men. Well, we are aware that PTSD is sometimes triggered by military sexual trauma or rape or other things. Women have to have a sense of security, and if they have to share a common bathroom with guys that can walk in while you're doing your business, that's not a safe environment. And it's disrespectful to their human dignity. And so we have been instrumental in keeping this issue before the Congress and getting it to the attention of the VA head, the VA chair, and to the White House. So this is one of the reasons why we continue to do what we're doing. We're talking about these things because they are important, because these are our sisters and our mothers that are sacrificing they're sacrificed and given their service, but they're not being returned the same amount of dignity that they gave the country in the first place. We got
absolutely, Doctor. Doctor, I think that there's no. I think that there's
that.
Absolutely, Doctor. I think we need to intentionally honor and respect the women who have served our country, many who returned to us with wounds from combat and wounds from other kinds of experiences related to their military service. My own daughter, recently was a combat veteran, served in Afghanistan, and I know personally the difference that that made in her own sense of worldview, being in that setting with the loss of life and the fear of attack any time of the hour, day, or night. That affected her sense of well-being. So I can very readily identify with the women who come through our doors who have been in the combat theater and who now live with a constant sense of fear. I understand it.
Yes. Well, we've had it from both sides here of the men and women, because it's not just – that's the other thing I have to keep out there – because we do have men, I'm one of them, that has suffered through military sexual trauma. And the thing is that one of our hosts, one of our founding hosts, committed suicide this past summer. So our family here on air has been touched by this crisis. And this is something why we have to do what we're doing, because if we don't do it, you don't see it in mainstream media. It's not going to come up. They don't want to deal with it. It's too messy. You know.
Yeah, and a lot of times they don't understand, though. Like Anna said, I don't think they fully understand. I don't think they understand that if you haven't worn the uniform, if you haven't been to combat, or if you haven't been through the kind of painful experience that you've been through, I think they don't understand, and that's why a show like this is so important. This is incredibly important.
Exactly. This is why we do what we do. You know, because if we don't do what we're doing, if I don't do what I'm doing, nobody else is going to do this. No one's going to bring this issue forward. You know, we've been told that we have been on the cutting front of bringing these issues forward on a day-to-day, day-in, day-out issue. We get in the face of people who are in Congress to talk to them. We're in Washington at least once a year, every year. We have a correspondent on the ground in Washington, D.C. So all of these things that we're looking at, and now we have somebody that can come on the show in Fayetteville, because you're welcome to use these airways to get your message out and defend yourself. This is not something that we try to make it so that we're accessible to the veterans to bring about the changes that we need to bring about. If we don't bring forth our changes, we're just as guilty as those that are prohibiting us. So we have to speak up whatever way we can. You know, I mean, when you have people that are pursuing, trying to kill your dreams sometimes and the things that you are establishing for good, you need to bring your side to air to the community. Because, you know, we're followed by 250,000 people per week. You know,
that's wonderful.
That being said, we're getting the message out there. So if we can get this message out there, we have to do what we can in order to make sure that that this message is consistent, this message is what's actually happening. And as I said, we have a responsibility to speak up. We have a responsibility to speak up for our community and report what's going on, whether it's in Fayetteville or Fairbanks, Alaska. You know, and I truly talked to coast to coast today because, I mean, I spoke to Oregon. My day started talking to someone in Oregon about a discharge upgrade. And then later on, I got a call from Florida about veterans benefits, something else about veterans benefits. And then I got another call from Missouri, and then your call came in from North Carolina. So the thing is that we have this need in the community for this resource because we don't have places that we can turn. We don't have a major TV channel that we can say, okay, well, we have this, but at least we have ADVIA.
Yes, and we salute ADVIA.
We
salute your efforts. We salute you, and we are grateful for what you're doing.
Well, the thing is, that's why I continue to do what I'm doing with this community, because of people like you who are making sacrifices out of your life. You know, to have the vision to do what you're doing. And the thing is that when you do things like that, you need support. You need someone to come along and shine the light and say, hey, here you are, this is what you're doing. Now, I don't put myself out there like as the face of the media organization, but I do put myself out there because if we don't shine the light on our issue with you, and then like I get in the face of Congress people to talk about your situation, about the troubles that we have as veterans organizations trying to meet the needs of our community. This is something that is a major thing, and we have to be more populated. So, you know, and we have to actively be a part of it.
Absolutely. And your show and your commitment to this great mission is what's helping to keep that alive and to keep it strong, Dr. Anderson.
Well, how did you hear of the show?
Well, actually, I must confess that it was my daughter. My daughter, the recent Afghanistan combat veteran.
Uh-huh.
She's been a real champion and just kind of working with us as we continue to, you know, to house homeless women veterans. And she said that she went out on the internet and she found you, she found a reference to what you were doing, And she was just very, very impressed and said, Mom, we need to connect with these people. And that's how the connection happened.
Well, you know, I'm glad to know that our reputation is getting out there. We had the pleasure of we went to the DAB convention in Denver, but we had such reception problems we were only able to communicate by Facebook because
okay.
The show, the way that the hotel was that because we're a podcast. We couldn't get the reception for the internet within the hotels, which were subterranean, like in the basement. So there were no, when she went in this hotel, you were in a black hole. So we couldn't get the show done. So that being the case, what we had figured out was that we would do whatever we could to, in order to make a make up for it, and we published, you know, by Facebook whenever we could. But that aside is what we do is we try to get to the one major veteran convention a year that we make sure that we're there because that's where we get a group of veterans together from organizations to find out exactly how you doing, what's going on in your neck of the woods. You know, so we know that in 37 states out of the 50 states, a veteran earning 100% disability has a hard time earning enough money to rent a two-bedroom apartment, let alone want to buy a home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of veterans who are 100% often in these 37 states find themselves having to pick and choose whether they're going to be able to pay somewhere between 50 and 70% of their income at $29.07 a month towards rent. If you have 30% of your income left, you don't have a lot. You don't have enough for food off. So the thing is that this is why we speak up. And then not to mention the active duty pay scale that we spoke of. Now, a lot of folks get upset with us and tell us, why is it that you do these things? Why is it that you bring up the pay scale? We bring up the pay scale because of the fact of the matter. It goes to the amount of the sacrifice in which we make. And
absolutely.
When we make this type of sacrifice, people don't have an economic indicator of the price of the sacrifice. So we try to make it a reality. Because by talking about it, then you get to actually see what we sacrifice in order to serve this nation.
Yes.
You know, financially.
Yes.
So that's one of the reasons why we speak up continuously and do what we do. If we don't do it, like I said, we're just as bad because we're not saying enough and not being heard enough to make a difference. You know, whether you're talking to Democrats, whether you're talking to Republicans, I try to tell people that we as veterans have no real friends and no real enemies because we're all in this together. We serve as veterans in the United States of America. And that means that that's all of us, Republican and Democrat. And we all have a responsibility to the men and women who serve.
That is correct, Dr. Anderson. And I think that by what you just said, just that whole call to unity, no matter what branch that you serve from or what era in which you serve, I think it's really important for the strength that comes from just having worn the uniform and defended this great nation. I think that there's a strength that comes from that realization, Dr. Anderson.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Barbara. You're very correct. You know, when we don't observe the strength that we're receiving from each other and for each other and by advocating for ourselves, that's when we have... we've forgotten who we are. and we can't afford it. So we have to keep on doing what we're doing. And it's a tiresome job, but somebody's got to do it. You know, I found during the government shutdown that it was to the point that we had a situation where our fallen were on the tarmac. We had a situation where our World War II veterans were being used as political pawns.
Wow.
And when this is during the shutdown, this is all within the first few days of the shutdown, then I'm getting reports from Congress that they're upset that they don't have hand towels in the congressional gym. In the meantime, the men and women who are working 24/7 aren't being paid. Nothing's being done to help them. I was screaming at the TV, somebody should do something, and it was intense silence. It came after me screaming that I realized that that somebody was me. And
with
all
you.
The veterans around them.
Isn't that beautiful?
You know,
isn't that a beautiful realization?
Yes,
that at some point we realize that when we see something that needs to be addressed, needs to be changed, or needs to be cared for, that at some point we realize that the people who need to do that, we are the ones to do it. And I think that's what I think that was our realization. That's what I saw. That's what my daughter saw. That's what my son saw. We saw homeless women and men, veterans, and we knew that we had space in our hearts and space in our homes, and we began to reach out. And we, like I said, for the first 5 years before there was a Jubilee House, from 05 to 2010, the men and the women, it was mostly women, though, the women veterans lived in our home. Yeah, we'd see them at the VA. They had a need. They had a concern. And we'd take them home, women with children. They'd live with us. We'd help them identify resources. We would pray with them. But the first Jubilee House was actually our family home, Dr. Anderson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
Yeah. So, again, so we've been real fortunate and real blessed to see some great things happen to the men and women who have come through our lives. We've seen women get their children back, get custody of their kids. We've seen women and men recover from, various addictions and life-threatening habits. We have seen men and women purchase their own homes and move into safe houses and safe communities. So we've seen a lot. We've seen a lot, and especially with the women who have children, I'd say that 70 or 80% of the women that we serve come to us with children. So we've seen a lot of what the children have gone through, and some of it's heartbreaking, but some of it's also encouraging to see how the community and the families can come back together after going through some really difficult times. So that has been a real blessing.
Well, see, those are the things that make the blessing worth the work that we're doing. You know, because even though it's hard work, this is not easy work. You can't do this if you have a weak heart. You've got to come in this with the determination and the tenacity to realize that we as veterans go through some very tough circumstances and situations.
Yes.
And so when we come into these types of environments, we have to make a commitment within ourselves that we're going to be in this for the long haul. You know, because it's not only am I helping my fellow veteran, but I'm actually helping my own self to heal. And it's not from the standpoint that I'm doing it from, I'm looking for self-aggrandizement. I'm looking for the ability to make sure that the quality of life improves the veteran so that my brother might fortune death, another veteran, my brother from another mother, his death was not in vain.
Wow.
The other veterans that die, their death is not in vain. We must do whatever we can in order to make sure that our veterans have the opportunity to come up with what we need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, and especially when those veterans are women, and again, many of whom have not been duly honored or recognized as veterans, I think that when we're able to make a difference in the life of a woman and allow her to see that she is a veteran and her service is valued, I think that we are helping in more ways than what we realize. Because when you help a homeless woman that has children, you're making a difference for a whole family. Yeah.
That is correct. That is correct. You know, and this is exactly why we speak up so loudly. I live in the southern part of Los Angeles County, and next door from the city of Long Beach, almost to the San Diego border, there are very, 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 very few resources for the women veterans. If the woman veteran had seek resources, they send that woman from San Diego all the way up, like it's almost 120 miles to LA to try to get help. And that's just ridiculous. No,
that's ridiculous.
Veteran shouldn't have to go that far.
No. No, absolutely not, doctor. Absolutely not. In fact, just today I got a call from a woman veteran. She identified, her first name is Heather, and she said that she's been in a recovery program here in Fayetteville. She'll be released on Thursday, and she asked me the question. She said, now, what kind of resources are available for me once I leave this place? Where can I find housing? Where can I find support? And my first response was, go to the VA. Make sure you're registered. But she said, I've been to the VA. Yeah, but she said, I heard that there's a dedicated program for women veterans in the community, and that's what I'm looking for, because I've been through military sexual assault, and I'm not comfortable being in a setting that's not sensitive to the needs of women veterans. And Thursday she'll be coming out. And Thursday she'll be coming out.
Okay. See, this is why we talk about the fact of the matter that we have to be active in our advocacy. If we're not the ones that are active in our advocacy, that's when we become just as responsible as those men and women that are stopping our veterans from actually getting what they need.
That's correct.
So, you know, that realization moment that you have experienced, like I have experienced, is something that we must do for each of us.
Yes.
You know, and I keep telling the people, I keep trying to tell the people, the answer, one of the things that you can do, you must hold your congressional representative accountable. Because if you don't hold that congressional representative accountable, what you're going to end up with is the continuation of treatment that we are having.
I think you are correct. I'm sorry.
No, but
I think you're correct. I think you're correct. And I think I've been remiss, or the members who, you know, volunteer with us, I think we've been remiss by not reaching out to Congressman Price and giving him the opportunity, you know, to acknowledge, you know, the service and the care of women veterans. So you are absolutely correct. That needs to be done. That needs to be a top priority.
Yeah. Exactly. Because when you look at it for what it is, we have to do that portion of it in order to make it so that we're able to do our job. You know,
that's
and
correct.
In order to do our job, we have a responsibility to keep it before the people, the public servants that we elect to go to Washington to come forward and talk to us about the issues that are going to help the community in which we're trying to assist.
Good. But if we have not made them aware, you know, of the things that are going on, then, yeah, that needs to happen. So you are correct.
Well, yeah, but you know what? You know what? It's never too late. It's never too late. Just because you haven't done it doesn't mean you can't change your mind and start doing it. You know?
That's correct.
And for everyone that I keep telling people, for every person that talks to the congressman, they consider it five hundred constituents. That's the formula that we've gotten from Congress when they get these types of calls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why. This is why we continually share this information. We give out the main number to Congress, 202-224-3121. If you don't know who your congressman is, you make sure that you wait for, you either get his operators that answer, or you can go, if you get the switchboard, they'll ask you, who do you want to speak to, your congressman or your senators? You put in your zip code. Everything is driven by the zip code. And then they will give you either your senator, one of the two senators for you, every state, or your singular congressman. Now, I always talk about the House a little bit more because you get faster reaction out of the House because senators are obligated to a six-year term. They don't have to move as fast, and it was built into the system to be that way. But in the House of Representatives, everything has to move within a two-year cycle. So every time, this is unfortunate because the moment they go to Washington, they're subject to raising money. They have to begin to work on their next campaign. So they get subjected to lobbyists. But this is where your calls make the difference to counterbalance the lobbyists. And when we can understand that type of scenario, that's where we have to make sure we make a big difference in keeping the veterans aware of what's going on. And also keeping our congressmen, what's going on with our activities in the community. See, because your organization has become somewhat of a hub. You're nationally known, you're known throughout the state for your advocacy. So you know that people are looking to you for leadership, and this is where you come and talk to the congressman on some of the experiences that you're having in serving the community. And that right there should open doors because they should be listening, because helping you will help the need of the community.
That's wonderful. That's excellent. That's excellent, Dr. Anderson. This has been an eye-opening conversation for us. It's like there's some things that you already know, but it's just good to hear it from somebody who's as close, you know, to the tipping point that you are. And right now, that's what a lot of us who help veterans are in need of. We're in need of that tipping point experience where you can see, okay, this is what I need to do in order to make the difference that I know that I can in the lives of these homeless women or these homeless men veterans or these homeless children and dependents of veterans. That's just phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And I just want to thank you. I just thank you for just kind of reminding us, you know, how we can better make a difference, and that is what it's all about. I think one of the things
if we can't encourage one another, then we're the best of a sad lot. And you know, it doesn't hurt that if you're a little jaded, sometimes you got to come close. Sometimes it's that fellowship among us veterans that helps us to recharge that battery and get back in the game. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that you're out of the game, but I'm just saying we get tired.
Yeah, we do.
I got to tell you, but Dr. Anderson certainly can tell you, I get tired. Tired.
Yeah.
Me going that this is bigger than me. This is bigger than me. Just when I think I'm doing something where I may have a concern or something else like that, I realize, wait a minute, I get a call. I get something else. Someone comes to me to bring me something, to ask me a question. And then I realize that my situation, while dire, is not as bad as some. And I'm not saying to the point that that everything is so bad, but I'm just saying, you never know how bad things are until you talk to others and you find out, hey, you're not alone.
That's
you
correct.
Know, veterans take their lives because they think that they're facing a situation alone.
Yes.
And there's,
yes.
There's no facing the situation alone.
Yes,
so the
yes.
end result
think,
of it is we can't leave ourselves behind there.
No. And like you said earlier, there's so much power in our unity. I think one of the most painful parts of what we've gone through this week, you know, with the locking of the doors on the houses where the veterans live and some other kinds of things, is I got a Facebook post from a woman veteran that we had helped, you know, with some housing and, you know, with some other kinds of support. And all she put at the top of it, she said, now what are we going to do now? If they shut down the Jubilee House, if they don't let the Jubilee House be specifically for women veterans, what are we going to do now? That was her question. She said, in fact, she said, what are we going to do now? Yeah, what are we going to do now?
The rallying point is go talk to the congressman. Tell everybody to load up on the congressman to let them know what's happening to the resource within our community.
Yes.
You know, because if we don't bring it to them, we don't bring it to the Senate, we don't bring it to the people that we need to bring it to, then, you know, we're not doing the full amount of what we can do.
That's true.
You know, I remain hopeful that Senator Tillis, who seems very, very, very interested in helping the veterans and women veterans especially, I would hope that he would be open and welcoming to you in your
mm-hmm.
efforts to gain some support. Because if not, we need to know about this, because we need to hear what you're saying, what's being said to the North Carolina delegation. So, you know, let's try to work on it. And please, Barbara, make sure that you bring it back to us so that we can share it.
I will do that, and I look forward to coming back, and just kind of talking with you and the rest of the people around the globe who understand that making a difference for veterans is what we must do.
Well, you know, Tuesday nights are women's night, and I'm going to be passing your name and number on to our correspondent who handles the segment on women's issues, because
good.
I think that maybe you and her can work together to see what's what and see where we can go from there. Well, stay with me through the close of the show. Folks, we're at the end of our stream for today. We will be back at 0100 hours tomorrow. We come on each and every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. We don't do Thursdays because of a commitment that precludes all of our hosts from being on the air. Everybody's got doctor's appointments and whatnot. But the end result of it is that the rest of the days we're here. And as soon as we can, we're going to get Thursday restored at some point, but we're working on that. But the end result of it is that we're going here the rest of the time, and we're even here 24/7 on Facebook. So we will see you at the same bat channel and same bat time tomorrow. Have a good day, folks.
And thank you so much, Dr. Anderson. We're grateful.
You're welcome. Oh, it didn't play. Okay.